from deep inside your radio.
Well, there's nothing standard about this, ladies and gentlemen. I'm back at the home, at the Le Show Dome in the H of the H, H of the H-less. And I want to thank the, I guess, unionized crew at Melbourne, Tullamarine Airport in Melbourne, Australia, because I don't know if you've had this experience, ladies and gentlemen, if you fly these days, but nothing makes a pilot happier, apparently, than to be able to announce to his passengers, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be landing some 20 minutes early. They just get all thrilled about that because, of course, they get to leave. They land the plane early. Bam, they're out of the airport and home. Meanwhile, the passengers, especially it's cute when you're arriving at like 11:30 on a Sunday night. It was a week ago tonight. It was a week ago right now. And we all got excited, too. We were early. And then the then we stood around and waited for our luggage for 55 minutes. Two flights arriving at the airport that time of night. One's luggage arrived immediately, and then we stood around. Now, they're a courteous people, the Australians, so unlike an American airport, we were treated to a voice on a public address system every 5 minutes saying that the airport apologized for the delay. Of course, only on Mars do you get an actual explanation, but we got an apology. Not the apologies, of, not a part of the apologies of the week, but we got an apology. And then I finally, we all finally got our baggage and got out of there, at which point we learned that the airport baggage workers had decided to take an unscheduled coffee break. So thanks to those guys. But I did notice one thing, ladies and gentlemen. You perhaps did not, being here in the United States, get much exposure to the big terrorism story of the last 2 weeks, which surprisingly was not the story of the snipers in the suburban Washington, D.C. area. It was the story of the two explosions in and around a nightclub in Kuta, Bali, in Indonesia, killing almost 200 Australians and other Westerners. Clearly a terrorist act, and given the size of the population of Australia, percentage-wise, almost as devastating to them as 9/11 was to this country. First of all, they took all of a week to deal with it. From the first wave of news stories through the benefit concert on television to the moment of silence and out the door, 1 week, and they moved on. And secondly, so far, no calls for increased security at nightclubs. Hello, welcome to the show. And happy Halloween.
Told me, say, the ship is gone. crazy, ridiculous, it doesn't make sense. That's true, but what can I do? I'm in love with a man, Plaza O, 4433. It's a perfect relationship. I can't see him, he can't see me. I'm in love with a voice, Plaza O, 4433. What a perfect relationship. I talk to him, and he just talks to me. And yet I can't help wondering, what does he look like? I wish I knew. What does he look like? Is he 6'7" or 3'2"? Has he eyes of brown or baby blue? Big and mighty or underfed? Trim black mustache or beard of red? Can he dance like Fred Astaire? Is he dark or is he fair? Pompadour or not a hair? Well, I don't care. I'm in love with a man, Plaza O, 4433. It's a perfect relationship, and that's how things should always be. Our love can never lose its mystery, 'cause I'll never meet him, and he'll never meet me. No, he'll never meet me. He could be the fat and balding type, or rugged tweeds with a briar pipe, dark-rimmed glasses, super mind, or the sweet poetic kind. It doesn't matter what he'd be, how he'd love me. Sue's answer phone.
Hello, Mom.
Yes, Mr. Moss.
Will you wake me up in a couple hours?
Yes, Mr. Moss.
But he's still just a voice, Plaza O, 4433. What a perfect relationship. I can't see him, he can't see me. He calls me Mom, he thinks I'm 63. And I'll never meet him, and he'll never meet me. No, he'll never meet me.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to Le Show, back in the U.S. of A. And before we do anything else, you know, there's always a lot of finger-pointing at the news media after a big story wends its way to its, if not its climax, at least its semi-climax, its semi-demi-climax. And so it is this weekend with the sniper story. A lot of questions being asked about the role of the news media. Ladies and gentlemen, the news media, you know, and I take my shots at people in that business too, they have a difficult job to do, keeping on top of everything that's going on. From one of our very reliable sources, from NBC's Nightly News last night.
A timely reminder now. In most of our country, an extra hour of sleep tonight with the return of daylight saving time. So don't forget to turn your clocks back 1 hour. When we come back, the speed of sound at age 79.
That's good.
What?
Going back to standard time.
We're going off of daylight saving time, Bob.
Going back to standard time.
We go back to standard time, don't we?
We just got a boo-boo. It should say going to standard.
Can I just tape it? Because I want to try to split if I can.
Yeah, it's rough. It's rough keeping on top of everything that's going on. Ladies and gentlemen, from April 1991, an article in the New York Times. April, don't be confused now. Don't set your clock ahead. April 1991, from the New York Times. This then Defense Secretary Dick Cheney being quoted. And I quote, if you're going to go, he's defending at the time George Bush, the number 41's decision not to go to Baghdad to end the Gulf War when it ended. 1991, Dick Cheney, quote, if you're going to go in and try to topple Saddam Hussein, you have to go to Baghdad. Once you've got Baghdad, it's not clear what you do with it. It's not clear what kind of government you would put in a place of the one that's currently there now. Is it going to be a Shia regime, a Sunni regime, or a Kurdish regime? Or one that tilts toward the Ba'athists, or one that tilts toward the Islamic fundamentalists? How much credibility is that government going to have if it's set up by the United States military when it's there? How long does the United States military have to stay to protect the people that sign on for that government? And what happens to it once we leave? Unquote. Dick Cheney. 1991. Be nice to ask him those questions now. If we could find him. We'll find him. He'll be here later in this broadcast, I do believe. But now, oh, do we have apologies this week.
We're so sorry.
I've saved them up for you, ladies and gentlemen. Because, of course, last week this program was so pre-recorded. I should apologize for last week's broadcast because a lot of you didn't appreciate that much of the Eurovision Song Contest. But no, we have real apologies. The New York City Transportation Department has done in a day what the United States Justice Department couldn't do in years. It made Microsoft say it's sorry. Microsoft accepted the blame on Friday for hundreds of plastic butterfly decals that were plastered across the face of Midtown New York City as part of its $300 million promotional campaign for its new internet service. Quote, we apologize to the city of New York and the people of New York City, said Yusuf Mehdi, the corporate vice president for Microsoft Network, in a statement released by his public relations firm. Quote, we made a mistake with the decals and we take full responsibility for what happened, Mr. Mehdi said. We are working with city officials to clean up the decals immediately. City says, we're delighted. City notified Microsoft within hours of the decal blitz on Thursday that the city intended to blame the company and hold it directly responsible for this illegal, irresponsible, and dangerous defacing of public property. Microsoft has offered to pay the cleanup bill. The butterfly swarmed in greatest numbers around Grand Central and Times Square. When it gets to the point where it's annoying even to us in the heart of the most rampantly naked commercial district, said the president of the Times Square Business Improvement District, one has to say that Microsoft has probably gone too far. Before Microsoft apologized, but it was hundreds of butterfly decals, each of which was a separate offense, yet the city levied only one $50 fine. So apparently, Microsoft doesn't have that much money these days. All right, more apologies. All employees of Chicago's all-news channel, CLTV, have been required to attend a sensitivity training session following a controversial incident that occurred on a sports talk show September 26th, when a spokesman for the Northern Illinois Hunting and Fishing Days appeared in black hunting camouflage and a turkey feather hat. Sports anchor Steve Cashel commented that he looked like Aunt Jemima. The remark drew protests, resulting in Cashel's suspension. CEO Dave Underhill of CLTV issued an apology. Dateline Oklahoma City, Steve Largent, Republican nominee for governor, one-time football player, Steve Largent, I believe, yes, used a vulgarism for bovine excrement. God bless the Associated Press. God bless him. In every other civilized country on the face of the earth, I could just say what Steve Largent said. I could say it on the air. But no, a vulgarism for bovine excrement, ladies and gentlemen, during a television interview, and one of his opponents quickly aired a commercial criticizing him for it. Yes, Largent, a football star turned politician, was hunting. He later issued an apology. The word was bleeped. He called a question about his whereabouts during the September 11th attacks, bold, during a taped interview. His whereabouts was that he was hunting in Idaho on September 11th, 2001. Okay, so that he apologized for saying that was bull. Missouri Senator Jean Carnahan apologized for letting her frustration turn into a remark that had opponents howling in a Clay County appearance. The Democratic incumbent says she's the number one target of the White House, and she told the luncheon crowd, they can't get Osama bin Laden, so they're going to get me. State GOP Chairwoman Ann Wagner called the comment despicable. Her Republican challenger, Carnahan's Republican challenger, Jim Talent, said most Missourians would accept a quick apology. In her statement, Carnahan said she meant no offense and is a strong supporter of the president's efforts to fight terrorism. John Lennon's killer, he's sorry. He said if he's freed from prison, he won't again make the mistake of working lonely late-night shifts, which he blamed for allowing his antisocial rage to fester. He told the parole board earlier this month he had had too much time alone in the months leading up to the slaying of the ex-Beatle. He also said he reread Catcher in the Rye, which he described as about the only book he'd read as a teenager prior to shooting Lennon, and began to identify with the main character, who was enraged by hypocrisy. He also said he started drinking heavily, but he didn't use drugs. So if he were released, he'd get a better job. He's not going to be released. Employers, you can relax. But he was sorry. A costume distributor said it has stopped shipping its Kung Fu outfit to retailers after Asian American groups complained it was racist. The Halloween costume, they said, perpetuates stereotypes. The company, Disguise Incorporated, said the adult costume, which includes a mask with buck teeth and slanted eyes, has already been shipped to retailers across the country, including Party City and Walmart. No more will be distributed. Disguise apologizes to any group or individual who may be offended by this costume and mask. The company said in a statement, no insult or offense was intended against any race, ethnicity, or individual by the sale of this product. How could they possibly have thought anybody would be offended by that? Leaders in the two main branches of Islam welcomed an apology for Reverend Jerry Falwell, who had angered Muslims by calling the founder of their religion a terrorist. Falwell deserves thanks for his return to the righteous path, said Mohammed Sayed Tantawi, the Grand Sheikh of Al-Azhar, a mosque in Cairo. In the Iranian city of Qom, an important Shiite Muslim center of learning, a high-ranking cleric said Falwell had shown courage. On 60 Minutes, Falwell said he'd concluded from reading Muslim and non-Muslim writers that the Prophet Muhammad was a violent man, a man of war. I think Muhammad was a terrorist, the minister said. Then, quote, I sincerely apologize that certain statements of mine made during an interview for 60 Minutes were hurtful to the feelings of many Muslims. I intended no disrespect to any sincere law-abiding Muslim. He made the remarks in response, he said, to one controversial and loaded question at the end of an hour-long interview. Those damn hour-long interviews, they can wear you down. That was a mistake, Falwell said, and I apologize. Some Muslims were not so ready to accept it. One cannot insult the Prophet, then apologize, says Sheikh Zohair Jaed, a Lebanon-based organization. Bill Simon, the Republican governor for candidate for governor of California, has finally apologized, regretting an error. He spent about a week and a half regretting the error and finally did say that he apologized. Under questioning from San Francisco radio host Ron Owens, who insisted that a wife stood up by her husband on her anniversary wouldn't accept regret. To me, said Simon, regret and sorry are the same thing, Ron. Ron replied, well, if they're the same thing, then say I'm sorry. Simon replied, I'm sorry. There you go, Owen said. You apologize to the governor. Simon replied, there you go. And the best apology story of the week, ladies and gentlemen. A British tabloid has run a full-page advertisement apologizing to Hollywood producer Steve Bing for publishing mean-spirited and inaccurate stories about him and for giving readers his home telephone number so they could call and berate him. The ad in Tuesday's editions of the London Daily Mirror contained a large photo of Bing above the headline, We're Sorry, Steve. The Mirror had published his number and urged readers to criticize his treatment of model actress Elizabeth Hurley. When she announced last November she was pregnant, she said Bing was the father. He questioned his involvement. DNA tests later found the producer was indeed the father of Damien Charles. The Daily Mirror apologized in the ad for untrue statements and insulting remarks about Bing, but didn't say what they'd been. We deeply regret the publication of those articles, the Mirror said. It also praised the work that Bing has done as a philanthropist. He's also a big Democratic fundraiser. However, his libel suit may be headed back to courts because L.A. lawyers for Bing threatened to revive his libel suit against the Daily Mirror after its editor suggested on BBC Radio that one needed a sense of humor to fully appreciate the newspaper's apology. Rival newspapers said the apology was so groveling that it suggested being a parody. So regret is not enough, but apparently groveling is too much. The apology initially satisfied Bing, and his lawyers, who issued a statement saying he was delighted that the Mirror has set the record straight. However, the heavy-handedly abject tone struck some as sarcastic, a conclusion bolstered by the paper's placement of the retraction opposite an opinion piece headlined, quote, "Why Americans Can't Understand Irony or Sarcasm," unquote. Boy, please explain that to me. Raising further doubts, the editor of the paper said in BBC Radio 4 interview, the apology was, quote, "the most extraordinary we have ever published in every sense, not least if you have a developed sense of humor," unquote. Bing's lawyers said they were thinking of taking the paper back to court. So you have to calibrate your apologies very carefully, ladies and gentlemen. Not just regret, but please don't grovel.
Stop wasting time. And one of these days I'll accept the fact I'm not getting any younger and I can't go back. Can't go back. And one of these days when I fall in love, it won't fall.
This is Le Show. Once again, we are looking at microphones set up in suburban Washington, D.C., just in case Chief of Police Moose decides to hold another press conference. So please, please, please stay with us. Because,
excuse me, Harry.
Yeah.
I know you're just trying to boost your ratings.
Well,
but even I can tell that this is pathetic.
Oh,
could we just,
Ralph, the talking computer? I'm going to be hyperbolic and say, welcome to the program. What you're now critiquing the our coverage?
Well, they caught the snipers. Excuse me. The alleged snipers.
There you go. Okay.
Chief Moose isn't going to have any more news conferences.
We don't.
The show's over. Nothing more to see.
All right.
Move on.
Well, your point, I guess, is well taken since we haven't covered any of the rest of it live. So, but we do have some time to fill. What would you suggest?
I haven't read one of Larry King's columns lately.
That's true.
They're always good. They're always the same.
All right.
And that's good.
Okay, this would be Larry King's column that's now on the CNN website since it's no longer in USA Today. So, as usual, I suppose you want some background music to put you in the mood?
I don't have moods. Only crashes and freezes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
But some music might prevent one of those.
You're right?
Sure.
Yeah, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, Ralph the Talking Computer reading this week's column by Larry King. King's Things. Ralph, you want to start?
I'm just digging the sounds. Getting in the mood.
You don't have moods, will you?
Okay. The New York Times is rarely guilty of laughable items. But the idea that their computer rates Notre Dame as the best football team in the country is absurd. And nothing against Notre Dame. They have a fine team, but they are not in the class of Miami or Oklahoma. Staying with sports, I didn't see a more impressive team all year than the Anaheim Angels. I think they have a great chance of winning the World Series. Mystery writer Jonathan Kellerman does it again. His latest, The Murder Book, is a guaranteed page-turner. Tim Conway and Harvey Korman remain as funny as they...
What's the matter?
You know what?
What?
I'd love to have a little verb on my voice.
A little what?
You know, a little reverb.
Okay.
Maybe something with a short delay and a long decay. Mucho atmospheric tickle with the whole vibe.
All right, Ralph, I'll give you a little reverb. Let's go. Read the column.
Okay. Cool. Tim Conway and Harvey Korman remain as funny as they were 40 years ago. Still laugh out loud stuff. Look for them on the show soon. Why do I have this feeling that the Washington Wizards will make the NBA playoffs this year? Don't be surprised. Even with MJ on the bench. The Emperor's Club, starring Kevin Klein, opens November 22. His performance is outstanding, a real must-see. Women for Hire, The Ultimate Guide to Getting a Job, co-authored by Tori Johnson, CEO and founder of Women for Hire, is a must-read for all job seekers. From nailing an interview to networking to moving up the ladder, it is the ultimate guide to getting the job you deserve. Didn't it seem like it was just Christmas? The older I get, the faster the clock spins. My spies tell me that the Four Seasons Resort in the Maldives is sensational. Romantics get online.
Ralph the Talking Computer reading Larry King's column. I didn't realize that clocks actually spin. I just thought they...
Hey, man.
What?
Everybody's a critic.
All right.
You try turning out one of these columns every week.
I know.
Reading all these books and seeing all these movies.
Ralph.
Okay. So maybe he doesn't actually read and see them. But he knows. Somehow he knows.
All right. Ralph the Talking Computer, thank you so much for bringing us back to our roots here with... this week's Larry King's
Colm King's things. I'm hearing your voice on some pop records. Are you getting more work?
Oh, don't start. Well, people are ripping off my chip left and right.
Oh,
it's like I don't even own my own voice. You wouldn't believe it.
Yes, I would. Ralph the Talking Computer, thanks
and
once
thank
again.
You for the verb, babe.
You are so welcome. The show continues.
Ladies and gentlemen, news of the media. NBC is in talks with Meredith Corporation about resolving charges that Meredith's Nashville, Tennessee station, WSMV, used compression technology to add extra commercials during network prime time. That's a violation of its agreement with NBC. The station had added a 30-second spot, an extra 30-second spot, like there aren't enough, to the West Wing episode of October 2nd. Nashville journalist Jeremy Haidt sent tapes to NBC. Jeremy Haidt had informally probed the station's practices. NBC had planned to investigate other recent network airings on the same station through monitoring services. Questions were referred to a company attorney. Meredith's group president, Kevin O'Bree, who would write that name? Denied or pleaded ignorance to the use of programming compression at his stations, but several sources have told Broadcasting and Cable magazine that earlier this year, sorry, it's not O'Brien, it's O'Brien. They left off an N. O'Brien made clear his intent to use the compression machines to add commercials for revenue gain. despite resistance from station management. Some machines were purchased by the group and delivered to the stations. That did not necessarily mean the machines had been used. No, I mean, buy machines and don't use them all the time. Why wouldn't we do that? And, ladies and gentlemen, confirming a trend, NPR, National Public Radio, revived a long smoldering identity crisis in its newsroom this month when it laid off Daniel Zwerdling, a veteran investigative reporter. So it's now a no Zwerdling zone at NPR. He was one of nine employees laid off as NPR tries to counter a sizable drop in underwriting revenue. He was the only journalist included. The decision to drop an investigative reporting post has shocked news staffers and given new definition to rising anxieties over the network's future. This is from Current, the magazine of public broadcasting, so this is not a critical source reporting this. We're trying to figure out if we're still the organization that a bunch of us helped birth, says Bob Edwards. It's fair to say that a lot of people are very nervous here when somebody of that caliber and that length of service is just thrown to the wind. A recent 30% decline in underwriting sales left NPR with an $8.5 million shortfall. Zwerdling's departure caused the most immediate worry. Reporters are particularly armed by the explanation Zwerdling says he received for his dismissal. He says the vice president of NPR News told him NPR was eliminating his investigative reporting position to protect its, quote, core mission. Zwerdling asked what core mission meant, and he says Drake told him NPR had to ensure it could cover live events, Capitol Hill debates, and the possible war against Iraq. Blame Iraq, babe. It's all Iraq's fault. The pundits, I guess, were wrong. The pundits and profilers. We have no regrets, says CNN's Vice President Sue Bunda. In the context of a discussion about the sniper story, we lean on these folks who have expertise to help guide our viewers through it. MSNBC's Vice President Mark Efron says the amount of speculation his network aired was caused by, quote, a dearth of information, which causes one to talk about the possibilities and potentialities of the story, unquote. Yeah, or it causes you to shut up. Could do that. Quote, Mark Efron, profiling is as much an art as a science, unquote. So, have more artists on. Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States is at the APEC conference, summit conference of Asian leaders this weekend at Los Cabos, south of the border. Russian President Putin was supposed to attend. Yeah, that's an Asian country. But, of course, his presence in Mexico was precluded by the necessity for him to stay behind in Moscow to deal with the crisis at a theater in which Chechen rebels took hundreds of people hostage. As you probably know, that hostage siege ended when a special branch of the Russian military blew a hole in the theater and then piped in a gas, which incapacitated not only the hostages but the would-be terrorists. The terrorists and more than 100 hostages were killed, and late reports indicate that most of them were killed, if not all, by the gas, although hundreds of people did survive. Russia refuses to elucidate as to exactly what's in the gas. And Vice President Dick Cheney is joining the president in the final furious couple of weeks campaigning to try to win Republican control of the Senate. It's a busy time for Dick Cheney.
Next, intimate tales of America's first underground vice president. The action-packed diary of the man who's less than a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 Maybe it's because John Ashcroft has ratcheted the security alert system back down to yellow. Maybe it's because we're 2 weeks away from an election that could give us every major political office except the presidency of DreamWorks Pictures. Whatever the reason, I was out of the bunker and on the road, fundraising in places where the president didn't want to appear. Or, more accurately, where Karl Rove didn't want the president to appear. After 3 weeks of the Army's bunker cuisine, even hotel banquet chicken was tasting pretty darn good. So, the president was down in Mexico for a meeting with Asian leaders. Let you know how far behind the curve Asian leaders are, and they think Mexico's a luxury site for a summit. And I was in Pascagoula, Mississippi, harvesting some of the last of the soft money before it goes hard. Saturday afternoon, 12:30 p.m.
And, Mr. Vice President, I'd like you to meet Everett Klingfold of the State Gaming Association.
Mr. Klingfold, it's an unusual name.
It is, Mr. Vice President. Thank you for noticing.
Well, thank you for noticing the urgency of winning the Senate and holding the House as well.
Well, we know better than anyone else what a big stake the thousands of members of the Mississippi gaming community have in this election.
Mm-hmm. Of course. If the Democrats regain power, Mississippians will see much more of their money being siphoned off to government programs rather mm-hmm. than being available for them to choose to gamble with.
Well, we prefer to say game with, but boy, well taken. And you know, this is a challenging time for us with the security concerns.
Which we're addressing.
And with this economy.
Which is steadily improving.
And the Indian tribes building more casinos than you can shake two sticks and start a fire with.
Well, you know what's interesting? A lot of the real so-called Native Americans don't even think that all that money is doing their tribes any good. So,
excuse me, Mr. Vice President. Mm-hmm. Mr. Klingfold's $5,000 window is up. And the defense secretary is waiting for you in the security trailer.
All right. You'll excuse me?
Sure. Real pleasure meeting you.
Both Everett Klingfold and I knew the meeting that was going to give him real pleasure happened an hour later in a much smaller room at the same hotel. But the little lies are the only practice you get for the big ones. Don Rumsfeld was sitting with that BS Buddha-like calm of his when I got to the security trailer, 12:47 p.m.
Sorry to barge in on a fundraiser like this. I was just on my way back from China.
Oh, no problem. You want to shake a few hands?
Well, some might look askance at the propriety of that. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we've reprioritized propriety. But we do seem to have a little problem with our friend Mr. Putin, don't you think?
Well, he and the Frenchies are still stalling our Iraq resolution in the UN, yes. But last time I looked, he had his hands full with that nasty little hostage situation.
Well, it's our conclusion that that nasty little situation played very well for him.
Hmm. You think? Well, he's shown that he can't control his Muslims any better than we can control the rest of them.
Well, with the successfully violent conclusion to that account, he does look stronger than our man does after the closing of the sniper account, don't you think?
Well,
the American who looks stronger now is Chief Moose, mm-hmm. and that adds nothing to our strategic balance, does it?
That's a strength of our system that Vladimir Putin might well be envying if the sleeper gas hadn't worked so well. We have the capacity to put a Chief Moose between us and potential tragedy.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we just think in our shop that our ability to produce Russian acceptance of our work product on Iraq is somewhat degraded right now. It's hard to position our friend Mr. Putin as lacking spine with regard to the terrorist challenge when he's just gassed and shot up a theater full of terrorists.
Mm-hmm. Well, what are you suggesting? What could we do to take our friend Mr. Putin down a peg? Encourage more Chechens to conduct more anti-Russian operations?
Well, even Saddam Hussein came out against the Chechens. That's a market opening for us, isn't it?
Look, I hate to be so naive as to use our intelligence products in a serious discussion, but what I've read indicates that the Chechens don't view us as particularly trustworthy partners at the moment. And by the same token, it's a little late to have Ashcroft Bigfoot, the domestic sniper account. So,
well, I'm just innovating here, but there is a large number of wounded hostages still hospitalized, is there not?
There are, yeah.
And the casualty toll rises as long as the doctors are in the dark about the chemical components of the sleeping gas to which the hostages were exposed. Am I correct?
That's what we've inventoried information-wise, yes.
So, we lean on our friends in the Russian military to withhold that information.
Mm-hmm.
And our friend Mr. Putin has the deaths of several dozen more innocents on his side of the ledger, does he not? And so his product attributes become recklessness and insensitivity, and the halo effect transfers back to us.
Dan, it pains me to admit it, but you're good. Particularly good.
Well, listen, my young friend, don't give me all the credit.
No?
No, I got the idea from our friends the Chinese.
Maybe it's just because he's in his early 70s. Hanging around Don Rumsfeld really does keep me feeling young. End of partial diary for October 26th. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
Ladies and gentlemen, time to update you on varied tastes in security practices around the world. In Europe, they don't even make you take your computer, your laptop computer, out of its bag to go through check on security. In Australia, they make you not only take the computer out of its bag, but take the battery out of the computer. Just a matter of taste. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, all up and down the east coast of North America via shortwave at WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, and around the planet Earth on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations, www.harryshearer.com and www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like calibrating the perfect apology if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. The email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. For those of you who are interested in finding out the names of musical selections broadcast on Le Show, playlists are posted at www.harryshearer.com. laying off no one to achieve our core mission. This is Le Show. Le Show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions. It originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world, despite its best efforts, as the home of the homeless.